Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Field, I just figured it out. I figured out your tattoo.
What do you got?
On your bicep, preferably your dominant arm.
Okay.
You get a tattoo caricature of your dog, Cisco.
Wow.
Just his face.
That's a good idea, actually.
I feel like that could be a great tattoo because if people are like, hey, do you have any tattoos? You can just pull up the sleeve and be like, why, yes, I do.
Yeah, but here's
Flex,
the issue. There's,
Cisco.
One fundamental issue, Alyssa, is that, so like when you have sizable biceps, you do want to throw, you want to show them off, right? When you've got little puny arms like me that are pathetic.
I wasn't sure where
it was
going.
Sad reminder of the fact that I'm just a washed up has-been. I'm not sure that I'm reflexing them very much.
But, you know, it could be a great benchmark for progress if you got the tattoo now and then you just got absolutely yoked and then Cisco's face was stretched across your bicep.
I am picking up what you're putting down right now.
Are we liking this? I feel like the more I'm talking, the worse.
You're talking me into it for sure. No doubt.
Sounds...
I love that dog more than life itself. It's ridiculous.
This sounds like a lose-lose situation. Either Field is not going to want to show off his bicep if it's not big enough, or if it gets too big, your dog will be defaced. So I'm not
sure.
That's a great point. I hadn't thought about that side of it. Maybe I'll just stick with the tattoo-less life that I've lived so far. It served me okay. I'm not Mike Golic Jr., but I have made a promise to him that if I do end up going down the tattoo route, I am going with him. He's probably going to have to hold my hand through it, but we're going to go together to his guy. Because you know when you've got like 19 tattoos like Gojo does, you've got a guy somewhere.
Yeah, maybe he'll get a tattoo of Cisco. We'll maybe have to figure that out at some point over the next couple of years. This is Janae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app. SiriusXM Channel 80 and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All of our guests throughout the show appearing on the Goodyear Hotline. He's Field Yates. I'm Alyssa Lang. Tune in to an AL East battle Sunday as the Rays host the Red Sox. Coverage of Sunday Night Baseball begins 6 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app, and at 7 o'clock over on ESPN. This Sunday Night Baseball preview is brought to you by Samsung Galaxy. You won't be able to go back to mediocre after this. Are you ready for this life? Find out at samsung.com/reserve. Speaking of baseball, it has been a huge day. The Major League Baseball trade deadline was today, 4 o'clock Eastern time. And I hope you kept your head on a swivel because I could not refresh Twitter fast enough for all the moves that were made across Major League Baseball. Chris Bryant is heading to San Francisco. The New York Mets are finalizing a deal with the Chicago Cubs for Javier Baez, and the Cardinals are going to pick up John Lester. Just some of the many, many trades that we saw go down today. Very, very notably, the Dodgers adding Max Scherzer and Trey Turner into the fold. Field, my question for you: did the Dodgers' World Series expectations go sky high now looking at this roster?
They did. However, Alyssa, it's worth noting that, of course, they're the defending World Series champion. And as we know, the Dodgers last year were able to overcome some demons that developed in the past decade or so. I don't know exactly which MLB team has the most wins over the past 10 seasons, but I'd imagine the Dodgers are near the top of that list. But as we know, prior to last year, the narrative surrounding the Dodgers was great during the regular season, sometimes okay during the early playoffs, but choking on big stages. Last year was not the case. However, we always talk about this in sports, so I'm going to kind of speak out of both sides of my mouth for a little bit. On the one hand, when you win a championship, you supposedly buy yourself this grace period going forward, right? When the Cubs snapped their streak of 100 plus years without a World Series, Cubs fans said, hey, I don't care if they don't win a game for the next 50 years. I'll die a happy fan because they won a World Series during my lifetime. And you say that kind of stuff. And then you know what happens, Alyssa? Is like a season later, if the team is struggling, you live in the moment and you're like, what the heck? I want another one. Why are we not winning today? So despite the fact that the Dodgers have goodwill surrounding them after their MLB World Series last year, there's still a lot of pressure on them. And the fact that they have loaded up is a great thing because it enhanced their chances of winning the World Series this year. They have a potentially dominant rotation, a potentially dominant lineup, which has underperformed up to this point in the season, relatively speaking. They're still a very good team. But now the expectations are, like I was saying earlier in the show, that there is no team that is the clear-cut favorite. Prohibitive favorite is in, like, they're leaps and bounds above the rest. But if I were to imagine the betting favorite right now, it's got to be the Dodgers. And there's no pressure that matches the pressure on the Dodgers for the rest of this season. There just is not. I don't care what team has what record. The Dodgers now have the greatest pressure on them.
We talked about this a little bit with the Lakers trade as well, with Russell Westbrook heading out there and joining that star-studded team. There is such a difference, right, between how high are the expectations and how high is the pressure and the disappointment that can result if you don't achieve what everyone believes you're supposed to be able to do with this roster. What happens after that? And one of the stats from Elias that I saw today was just mind-blowing, Field. Including Scherzer and Turner, the Dodgers will have 17 former All-Stars appear in a game for them this season. That's tied for second most in a single season in franchise history. In the last 10 seasons, the 2012 Yankees are the only team with more former All-Stars. That's 18. This is one of the questions that I think you can ask in all of sports. It's one of the questions that I asked on Sunday when the U.S. Olympic men's basketball team lost to France. Is too much talent always a good thing? Or are you fighting because you've got too much talent and you can't get everybody on the same page?
Yeah, I mean, baseball's interesting because, like, getting people on the same page is sort of like just like letting them do their job,
right?
Like,
different
it's not
from
collaborative
basketball.
In the way that exactly basketball and football and hockey and other sports are. But it's pressure, but these are good things. These are good problems for the Dodgers to have right now, Alyssa. But I thought it was a fascinating trade deadline beyond just what the Dodgers did, right? I mean, just the idea that the Dodgers sort of pried Max Scherzer away, not just from the Nationals, but also the Padres, who there was significant momentum in a deal towards yesterday. The fact that you had teams that right now, like, they could have gone sink or swim. I mean, the Yankees could have easily, and I understand that the Yankees, and they've got 28 consecutive winning seasons, but still, like, the Yankees, some people thought would have been better served long-term by trading away the pieces on this roster because it's been such a grand disappointment for them throughout this season. They decided to be buyers with both Anthony Rizzo and Joey Gallo. The Mets were big buyers with Javi Baez, amongst other pieces. The Mets are first in first place in their division, but far from a perfect team. Ask any Mets fan. I follow plenty of them on Twitter, and they are frustrated frequently by the way that this team performs, especially with Jacob DeGrom missing some time of late. So the idea that half of MLB thinks it's at least got a chance is exciting for a sport that right now, we know, listen, we've had a million different debates about star power and faces of the of MLB, right? But the reality is that right now, just based off of the sheer number of teams that have positioned themselves in their own eyes to make a run at the World Series, this should be one of the most compelling second half, well, final third of the regular season and potentially the playoffs that we've seen in quite some time. There's going to be good teams that, I'm not talking about good teams that lose in the wild card. There are going to be good teams because we know the wild card now is a one-game playoff to get into the playoffs. There's going to be a good team or two that just straight up misses the wild card entirely, but feels like right now on July 30th, they have a legitimate shot to win the World Series. It's an interesting, interesting last 50 or so games ahead for the MLB.
You mentioned the Mets at the top of the division, and I want to share this story before we go to break because I feel like there are a lot of Mets fans out here who could probably resonate with this. Field, you know this very well. Love to talk about my dear old dad on the radio waves.
Great man, Mr. Lang. Great
dad
man.
Is from Queens, New York. He's a Jets fan. He's a Mets fan. The rest of the family, though, Yankees fans. My dad one day said, you know what? I'm not going to be a Yankees fan. I'm going to be a Mets fan because I'm not going to jump on the bandwagon. So he grew up a Mets fan with my great-grandfather, his grandfather. I grew up a Jets fan. Womp, womp, womp. Yeah, tough childhood. And I remember being probably about 10, 11 years old and saying, Dad, we don't really watch a lot of baseball. I watch every other sport with you. Why don't we watch baseball? And he said, well, Alyssa, I'm a Mets fan. You know, I don't follow baseball, so I don't really know what that means at the time. And he's like, I just loved you too much to make you a Mets and a Jets fan as a child. And I'm like, okay, that doesn't make any sense, whatever. Then in 2018, I still remember being in Jacksonville and seeing that the Nats beat the Mets 25-4 in a game. And I texted my dad that day and I said, "Dad, I never realized how much you loved me until today. Thank you for not making me a Mets fan." And now I'm kind of like, okay, they're not looking so bad anymore. Maybe I should have jumped on that bandwagon while I still could have, you know, claimed it. Now I can't. Now it's too late for me.
Yeah. And your dad, I mean, he is a...
He's happy now.
Passionate and strong-minded man, because I know he's a Jets fan, a Mets fan.
Very loyal.
Loyal to the soil, if nothing else.
Yes. Yes, he is. Shout out to Papa Lang out there. I guess my baseball affiliation and fandom is still open for business, so I still need to figure that out. All right, we've got plenty more coming up on Jhené Ngolick Jr. We mentioned the Russell Westbrook trade in that last conversation. Does the addition of Russ make the Lakers the favorites in the West? Alongside Field Yates, I'm Alyssa Lang, filling in for Jhené Ngolick Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Jhené Ngolick Jr., the podcast.
Lots of news the last couple of days. If you're a fan in Los Angeles between the Lakers and the Dodgers, as we welcome you back in to Jhené Ngolick Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. Alongside Field Yates, I'm Alyssa Lang, filling in for Jhené Ngolick. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All of our guests appearing via the Goodyear hotline. Let's talk about the Lakers. Of course, big time Woj bomb hours before the NBA draft last night. The Lakers agreed to a trade to bring Russell Westbrook home to LA. So now a star-studded team, as if it wasn't star-studded already, they've bolstered it quite a bit more, and the expectations for the Lakers, I think, have probably shot up quite a bit. A team that we're pretty much accustomed to seeing deep into the postseason this past year, I felt like, was a breath of fresh air field, having Phoenix and Milwaukee in the NBA Finals, something different. Two fan bases who hadn't seen the finals in a while, but you know the Lakers are one of those teams ready to get back into the conversation. Where do you think this lands them as far as favorites going into next season?
Yeah, and shout out to George Sedano, who joined us earlier on in the program, and he articulated the thought that I feel the same way on, which is that even if this trade wasn't made, I probably had the Lakers penciled in as my favorite in the Western Conference, not by default, but semi-process of elimination. If you look at the West right now, if it's not the Lakers, who is it? And I don't think there's an obvious, okay, this team is clearly ahead of the Lakers. If Suns fans are mad about that, I feel you. At the same time, the Suns fans probably also know that the team that they played in the first round of the playoffs was not nearly the whole version of the Lakers. So I believe the Lakers are the favorites right now, it's July 30th, in the West. But Alyssa, I will add this. If there is a way in which this trade goes wrong, it's probably these. And these are the ways or the reasons behind it, is that the NBA in recent years, despite how some of the most recent champions have won, has moved and gravitated towards a league of floor spacing, a league where you can attack from the perimeter because you can shoot a reasonable clip from three-point range with four or five bodies on the floor and death by three-pointer. The Lakers right now have three players, none of which are considered dominant, or not even considered, none of which are dominant three-point shooters, none of which are known for living on the perimeter and simply taking jump shots throughout the game. They are sort of zigging when much of the league is zagging. Beyond that, it's only one ball, right? Which, that's a phrase that we use with the Nets, and the Nets figured it out pretty quickly with James Harden and Kyrie Irving and also Kevin Durant. But what we also learn with the Nets is that at some point, someone's going to have to concede. So someone's going to have to concede for the Lakers. I don't want to say that this is a move that I like wholeheartedly disapprove of. I happen to be a big believer in some of the stuff that Russell Westbrook does beyond just scoring. But, you know, there are ways in which this trade can be viewed, or will be viewed, potentially could be viewed, as disastrous a year from now.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how that plays out just with the personalities on that team. And as you said, there's only one ball. You already have a superstar. With this addition, I mean, this trio, Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, have combined for 34 All-Star selections. And looking at Westbrook and LeBron, their production in their career is not too far off. Two of the three players in the NBA, in NBA history, to have career averages of at least 20 points per game, 7 rebounds per game, 7 assists per game. So to your point, I do wonder, we talked a little bit, I mentioned it in the last segment, with what I saw from Team USA in the Olympics against France on Sunday, this is a sport where sometimes if you don't have those role players, you can't function in that high-profile, especially playoff environment. You talk about gelling. You talk about understanding your role. It will be interesting to see how this plays out. Obviously, a blockbuster trade. Everyone was talking about it leading up to the draft yesterday. Woj was on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin earlier talking about some of the motivation for Russ to go back to L.A.
Russ is as unique of a player that we've seen in this generation. He plays the game in a way that's kind of goes against the grain of in this modern age, and he had a fantastic season with the Wizards last year and brought them back with Bradley Beal and got them into the postseason. And he brings a ferocity to that team, to that city. Mm-hmm. He obviously played at UCLA. He's from Southern California. He really wanted this. He wanted this to happen. And I think when the chance to go, not just go home, but go play for a championship contender.
Yeah.
I think that Washington team, they're going to continue building around Bradley Beal.
How do you think this plays out, and when do you think we start to see if this thing is really gelling, Field? Because obviously it's going to take a while for everyone to get on the same page and to understand what this thing needs to look like. But how long are you going to give it until you say, okay, yep, this is the team that I'm riding with to the finals, or nope, this isn't working out?
Yeah, I won't know until the playoffs start next year, Alyssa, when they get really battle-tested. Because typically when these teams come together in whatever you want to call them, super team fashion, and I get it, maybe they aren't the super team in the same way that LeBron and D-Wade and Chris Bosh were when they got to Miami. But as we saw there, as we saw with LeBron when he went back to Cleveland, it took some time early on for those teams to mesh. I believe at one point the Heat were 9-8 to begin the tenure of the Big Three. At one point they also, of course, won 22 or 23 straight games. So once they got going, they got really going. But the true test will be how this team performs in the playoffs, where the limitations or the potential limitations of these three players together rear themselves, specifically with Russell Westbrook, who not a talented three-point shooter, speaking generally, potentially some ball stoppage issues, and potentially just the idea that who is going to be the person that they count on in critical moments. If they have a game-winning situation, who is the person they call upon? Is it LeBron? Is it AD? Is it Russell Westbrook? I don't think that's clear right now, but that'll be when we actually assess the viability of this trade. That's when the trade will be able to have a referendum on it one way or the other about a year from now. Because in the regular season, I expect this team to be very good. I also, as I said earlier, believe that in the regular season, this trade makes a lot of sense. And the idea that if AD or LeBron misses time, you've got your piston for the offense, and that's Russell Westbrook, a guy who always goes 110%. But this trade, we can grade it right now, but the real grade comes June of 2022.
Yeah, the numbers and the trends would tell you that Westbrook should be able to help the Lakers in a big way with his playmaking. Los Angeles ranked 18th in points per game created off assists last year. Westbrook has led the NBA in that category 3 of the last 4 seasons, the one exception being the year that he spent with James Harden in Houston. So as you said, we will know when we know, but Russell Westbrook, a new member of the Los Angeles Lakers, already looking forward to the next NBA season tipping off. All right, coming up next, we're going to get back into the NFL, and how much can NFL teams police those strict COVID-19 protocols? We'll get into that next alongside Field Yates. I'm Alyssa Lang, filling in for Chinay Ngolick Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chinay Ngolick Jr., the podcast.
Every time I hear this song, I want to sing, but I don't think I can hit that note, so I won't embarrass myself. Maybe one day we will get those sweet notes here on ESPN Radio. This is Chinay Ngolick Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus alongside Field Yates. I'm Alyssa Lang. This weekend preview is brought to you by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. Some news out of Colts camp. Quarterback Carson Wentz out indefinitely after undergoing further testing for a foot injury that he suffered at the end of Thursday's practice. We will get more into that, and I'm sure there will be more news coming out of that as they await more information from testing, scans, meeting with a foot specialist. But, man, Field, that's a tough situation for Carson Wentz, who's obviously seen a lot of change over the last couple of years.
And not listen, any team that has its starting quarterback suffer an injury in preseason is going to be pressed up against it. But the Colts, you could argue, are about as pressed up against it as really any team in the NFL. If you look at the depth chart behind Carson Wentz in Indianapolis, it's Jacob Eason and it's Sam Ehlinger. Jacob Eason, a fourth-round pick last year. Sam Ehlinger, a seventh-round pick this year out of Texas. This is a team that traded for Carson Wentz as a calculated maneuver because they believed, despite how he played last season, that at his best, he's good enough to elevate a roster that we know is really, really good. I mean, the Colts defensively have key cornerstone players in all three levels, one of the best offensive lines in football, an emerging star running back in Jonathan Taylor, a great head coach. The ingredients were in place for a deep playoff run, or at least a playoff run period. We do not know the timeline on Carson Wentz's recovery. It sounds like there's a chance he might miss much, if not all, of training camp, Alyssa.
Yeah.
But this team, in terms of depth, is pressed up against it about as much as any other team that wants to make noise and make the playoffs this year. And there are options amongst veteran quarterbacks, but there's not a lot of options amongst veteran quarterbacks that are available right now to the Colts. They better start thinking hard and fast about evaluating the trade market right now.
A source did tell ESPN that the Colts don't think that this is a season-ending injury, but again, still waiting more information from testing after that injury after yesterday's practice. Some other things that are going to be ongoing conversations as we approach the start of the NFL season are the COVID-19 protocols, obviously different for vaccinated versus unvaccinated players. You can be fined. At one point, they were even floating around an idea of players wearing trackers if they were vaccinated versus unvaccinated. And we saw NFLPA President J.C. Tretter say that that's not something that he agrees with, feeling the NFL's maybe trying to shame players, calling the idea nonsensical. Field, I think the question is, how much can these teams do as far as policing a very large roster, a very large group of people, and keeping track with who's vaccinated and who's not, and enforcing those rules and consequences?
Well, as you can imagine, Alyssa, teams don't want to be responsible for policing their players. It's an uncomfortable dynamic. The NFL and the NFLPA will largely handle that. As you can recall last year, you may recall last year, the Titans were one of the teams that had one of the larger breaches of protocol, and we found that out in part because of video equipment that were placed throughout facilities. So a lot of the protocols will be monitored through that video system, and there's going to, it no doubt requires some effort and some sort of honor code on the hands of teams and players alike. But I think the biggest takeaway that I've gathered up to this point is that the NFL is not requiring players to get vaccinated, but they're basically requiring players to get vaccinated. And it's clear that the rate is increasing daily, I think, as players are more and more aware of just how restrictive life will be for them if they are unvaccinated during the season. And most recent check, I believe the NFL announced it was somewhere around 87% of players have had at least one shot. So within the next couple of weeks, you would think that nearly 90% of the league could be fully vaccinated. So I think the NFL will always stop short of requiring a vaccine for players. I think there are too many individuals that believe it's a personal decision, that they would never require it. But I think it's very clear that the NFL has impressed upon its players that if you're not vaccinated, life's going to be a lot more difficult for you. And there are potentially significant repercussions for you and all of your teammates as well, and your opponents, if something happens with an outbreak. So We don't know what the NFL season is going to look like. They didn't have a single game canceled last year when we were in a much more precarious spot. They feel good about that being the case this year, Alyssa. But these policies and these protocols are not going to go away and not be a storyline for us throughout training camp until the NFL's vaccination rate is close to 100%.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. The protocols and the guidelines that you have to follow if you're unvaccinated are just going to make life very inconvenient for you. On top of that, thousands upon thousands of dollars in fines if you don't follow that. I'm curious to see if that number doesn't go to 100%, if it starts to cause a ripple effect across locker rooms with players speaking their mind and giving their opinion in one way or the other, how that affects chemistry on and off the field, because as you said, it's very personal to a lot of people and can be a very touchy subject, as we've learned over the last year or so. So yeah, that will be a conversation that continues throughout training camp and up until week one, certainly, as the NFL monitors their COVID-19 vaccination rate across the league, as of course across other sports as well. That conversation will continue. We've got one more segment coming up here on Chiney and Golic Jr. The NBA last night with a very moving moment honoring Terrence Clark's memory during the NBA draft, bringing his family up onto the stage. We'll get more into that coming up next. Alyssa Lang, Field Yates here with you, filling in for Chiney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
Chiney and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Radio, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80, as well as ESPN Plus. Alongside Field Yates, I'm Alyssa Lang. Before we get into our last segment, I want to thank all of the guests that we've had throughout the show this afternoon. George Sedano, June Lee, Harry Lyles Jr., covering everything from NBA trades to the MLB trade deadline to the news across college football. We've had a jam-packed show all day, but it's the last segment of the day, so it's time to keep that same energy.
We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You could just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Chiney and Golic Jr.
Keep That Same Energy is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. They'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or by calling 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Our first topic, Terrence Clark. He was a former Kentucky Wildcats basketball player who passed away tragically in a car accident just a few months ago while he was training to be selected into the NBA. And on Thursday night's NBA draft, the league took a moment to honor him and his family. 19 years old, Commissioner Adam Silver paused the draft, invited his mother, sister, and brother onto the stage, and the NBA officially selected Clark, giving him that honor that he would have undoubtedly received in last night's draft. Here's a listen to how it sounded.
The NBA selects Terrence Clark from the University of Kentucky.
Field, I have chills just listening to that again after watching it live last night. There was not a dry eye in my house watching that. I mean, just a tragic, tragic loss for the Clark family. But seeing that moment, I think, gave his mother and gave his family a little bit of happiness on a very, very emotional night, seeing him finally make it to the NBA.
Yeah, it's a night that had many memorable moments and players taking the stage, but unquestionably this will be the moment that I think lasts longest and people will remember for all the emotions it invoked. Terrence Clark obviously had so much promise. I am from the state of Massachusetts. Had the opportunity to follow the high school career of Terrence Clark, one of the most decorated recruits in the history of Massachusetts, and a player who a lot of people who, from where I'm from, followed closely and hope to see big and great things for him was not with us for long, but he accomplished a lot. Just a special, special moment, incredibly well orchestrated by the NBA. And to your point, hopefully his family had a little bit of happiness last night. I'm not sure you can quite come to peace with such a tragic event. But we hope that last night for the Clark family was a moment they'll always remember and think back upon with not just pride for what Terrence would have accomplished, but also just love and embracing the affection the NBA showed for them. So well done by the NBA.
Yeah, a lot of love for the Clark family as well as Kentucky Basketball Nation, who I know are still mourning that loss. Coach Calipari tweeting about it yesterday. He always talked about how Terrence Clark was just this infectious ray of light in the practice facility at Kentucky. His smile, which you can see in photos, is just so, so infectious. So a very moving and emotional moment last night by the NBA. All right, let's move on to Simone Biles. Obviously, she has been the topic of conversation for the last couple of days with the Olympics. She was plagued by the twisties, which is what they call it in the gymnastics world, sort of like the yips in the baseball world, saying that her mind and her body were not in sync as she's doing those just fantastic acrobatic moves that I still feel just every time I watch her, I'm just like, how is this physically possible? But Simone also standing up for mental health and saying, you know what, I was putting myself in a dangerous position by being out there and I needed to look out for my health and safety.
Imagine doing any of the acrobatic things that she does in a perfect state of mind, right? Like, that alone is difficult enough. Like, you couldn't give me a trampoline and 15 years to master it, to be able to execute one of her maneuvers. And the thought of doing so in a less than perfect state of mind is frightening, right? It's a mental health issue that has potentially physical health ramifications, right? It just takes one misstep or one jump that goes the wrong way to have serious ramifications on someone's life. And I understand that many people viewed Simone Biles as the face of the Olympics this year. The most notable athlete, not just in her sport, but in any sport, to compete in Tokyo. And I know that if she had won individual all-around gold and the team had won all-around gold, perhaps that's the story that defines the Olympics. But I think, Alyssa, there's a chance that she'll still be the story that defines the Olympics and have a reach that transcends well beyond the balance beam and the uneven bars and the floor mat and gymnastics as a sport, which I think is admirable and commendable by Simone Biles.
She's the greatest of all time, and in so many ways, not just in what she does in her sport field. To your point, Simone Biles has such a reach in what she does on the gymnastics arena and also what she has done as far as mental health and everything else in her life. All right, our last story. This is awesome. Kyrie Irving continuing his philanthropic efforts with a foundation to help build a solar water center in one of the poorest parts of Pakistan, in a village considered one of the hottest places on earth, has given them water, new life. This is the one of the coolest things ever, and Kyrie is no stranger to giving back to the community.
Yeah, Kyrie is an interesting character because so many, you know, he's had some moments on the court and with some of his decisions within the NBA that do not endear him to NBA fans, but there is no doubt, as you said, he has donated both time, resources, and money to make others in a much less privileged spot live a far superior life. So shout out to you, Kyrie Irving, for doing what you did. You're going to have an immeasurable impact on thousands and thousands and thousands of people for a very long time.
Shout out to you, Field Yates, because I always love doing radio with you. This is my first time on Janae and Golic Jr., and you made the last 3 hours a ton of fun. Thanks for hanging out. Coming up next, we've got
right
Spain and Fitz. Thanks to Field Yates, I'm Alyssa Lang, filling in today for Janae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.